This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, last Thursday in Washington, Joe Biden, the president, stumbled and fell on a platform where he had made a short speech. It was another moment, and there have been others. This was the fourth time he has stumbled in public in recent months. And of course, he's 80 years of age, and there are doubts about his capacity and his cognitive faculties, as well as at 80 years of age, whether he can be an effective president for 6 more years, really. He's going to be the Democratic nominee. He is the Democratic nominee, we think, in 2024. That election is 17 months away or thereabouts, next November. But already the Republicans are up and running. Trump is declared. And Ron DeSantis appears at the moment, the governor of Florida, who won Florida by 20 points. And Florida is a swing state, purple state, as they call them. So DeSantis is running, and both of those gentlemen would be facing, it looks like, a weakened President Biden, whose poll numbers at the moment are shocking. What would this mean for Europe? What would it mean for Ukraine? We're joined now to talk about that by John Kampfner. John is one of the most distinguished British journalists. He's also an author and a broadcaster. His book, Why the Germans Do It Better, Notes from a Grown-Up Country, was well received and sold well. And he is now writing another book about Germany. John, thank you very much for joining us and welcome. The signs of Joe Biden's frailty, in a sense, belie, I think, but your opinion is what we want, the really outstanding leadership he's given over the Russian invasion of Ukraine in terms of galvanizing NATO, uniting Europe in a kind of way, putting American power, financial and weaponry, behind Ukraine in a sort of an uncompromising way. And it's, I think, made a difference. Would you agree with that assessment of Biden so far?
Hi there, Eamon. I mean, I think Biden is almost a metaphor for the way people look at politics in the around the world nowadays. He's the opposite of the populist. In fact, he's one of the very few avowedly non-populist leaders anywhere in the world. He doesn't go for cheap stunts. He doesn't go for charisma. He doesn't go for the grand gesture. He gets on with his work. And yeah, if you did a line-by-line assessment of what he has done in his first term, it's pretty impressive. The very strong support from Ukraine for Ukraine at a time when everybody was pretty much writing off the resolve of the West. In, it was like only a matter of time before the authoritarians took over everywhere. NATO had been declared by President Macron, no less, as brain dead, etc. On the domestic front, even though Europe and others have been squealing, he has introduced this incredibly radical Inflation Reduction Act. to protect American jobs, but at the same time, to absolutely fast-track American commitment to green energies. It's just almost like a complete recalibration of the American economy. If that isn't a testament to the power of the state, I don't know what is. And then only recently he got through the gritted teeth of the Republicans, a budget deal at a time when everybody was fearing that the American economy would literally grind to a halt, not to mention other things as well. And yet, the only thing people talk about is when he stumbles, when he falls down, when he misspeaks, whatever else like that. And they think he's too old, and it's moot whether he is or not. So we're just in this incredibly confused world where somebody who's actually done pretty well but isn't given the credit.
Yes, and I mean, the numbers of people, it's 37% of people who think that he is strong enough to be president and continue to be until 6 years from now. The other number is a bad one. All the polls have him trailing a Republican, whether it be Trump or DeSantis or some other one, although it seems unlikely to be. The question that would concern us, and I wonder if you share the concern, is what an American first or make America great again president would mean for NATO, for Europe, for Ukraine, and how close we are to that. We seem to be close to losing the Biden administration, which, as you describe it, is you know, it deserves some merit, to say the very least. And it's a kind of old-fashioned belief we had that the Americans would, you know, as Roosevelt did, come in before the Second World War and support us. And there's another issue, of course, which Biden has been very forthright on, and that is the Chinese interest in Taiwan. He said, and it isn't official American policy, but he had said America would not stand idly by if China made a move on Taiwan. He's not supposed to say that, but he said it, and he said it credibly.
I mean, first of all, I wouldn't say, Eamon, that all is immediately lost at all.
Yes.
I mean, the campaign hasn't even begun. So we have no idea how it will pan out, and
of course,
what will happen. We are still, 15, 16, 17 months away from an American election, and anything can, you know, a week is a long time in politics. That's a lot of weeks. I don't understand why Biden has chosen or rechosen Kamala Harris as his running mate, because at the risk of sounding morbid, if Biden did die on the campaign trail or into his second term, everybody is looking at who would take over from him.
Yes.
There'd be many examples of vice presidents becoming president. And she has no great political power base or strength. She has hugely underperformed and unimpressed. So why he wanted to stick with her, I don't know. A very strong Veep would make, I think, would have,
yes,
got some people who were reluctant to support Biden because of his health and potential longevity over the line. But it does depend in what happens. Obviously, will depend a lot on events, but it does depend on just how rational or irrational the American voter is going to be. And Trump won last time by a whisker, and there was such a dislike, rightly or wrongly, for Hillary Clinton, that, you know, it was almost like the Democrats lost it rather than the Republicans won it.
Yes.
And then a lot of Americans, reasonable Americans, not Trumpistas, but reasonable, the people in the middle who voted for him, but then they saw what a Trump first term was like. Would they really have the stomach to vote for him again? So, you know, who knows? Now, that assumes Trump will win the Republican nomination, which is, I think he will. I mean, we saw or didn't quite see the sort of hilariously abject launch of the,
yes,
of the great Elon Musk show with Ron DeSantis,
yes,
which was a, you know, it'll be held up in future as how not to launch a campaign. in the future hasn't absolutely killed DeSantis, but my God, it sent him backwards.
Yes.
None of the other candidates, Nikki Haley, possibly Mike Pence, who knows, but it seems unlikely. It seems like Trump has pretty much got the Republican Party now where he wants it. So it will be probably a Biden against Trump. So to your question, let's just assume he will win. And I think it's a pretty reasonable assumption, notwithstanding what I've said. It will be absolute mayhem. It will be mayhem on Ukraine. One of the reasons, and it may well be that the counteroffensive has already begun, or it's right on the cusp of beginning now. That is why what happens in the course of 2023 in Ukraine is so important.
Yes.
Because by the time we get to next year, the extent to which the Americans will wish to engage on Ukraine will be far, far less than they have this year. It's also absolutely is a great sense of rejuvenating Putin, because he just thinks, oh, wow, I just need to hang on in Ukraine and generally. And then we get Trump coming in, who's already said, as you said in your preamble, that, he's neutral. I think neutral's probably putting it politely. I think he loves authoritarians. You know, he would have probably done a deal with Kim Jong-un in North Korea, given half a chance.
Yes.
He loves Putin. He loves Erdogan. He loved Bolsonaro before Bolsonaro was kicked out. So, the more unpleasant they are, the more likely they're to be friends with Trump. But then we get to also just something you said, then we get to China. And that is where it could well be that Trump is spoiling for a fight.
Yes. And of course, a fight with China would be no win for everyone. And the Chinese have said that. And indeed, the Biden administration sent an emissary in recent weeks, a senior CIA figure, to talk to the Chinese in an attempt to prevent things escalating there, as they seem to have been doing. The question that also arises, I think, is the unity of Europe that Biden has encouraged and, in a sense, inspired. He's come to Europe. He's had meetings. NATO is strong. There is unity where, in reality, and you know it better than most because you spent so much time as a correspondent in Russia and in Germany and elsewhere. The unity now, say, between the Hungarians, Poles, French, Germans, is it strong enough, would you say?
Ooh, it's a good question.
It's a very important question, isn't it?
It's a mixed picture. It's a hell of a lot stronger than it was. NATO as an institution and the European Union as an institution, both being, by the way, very well led by Stoltenberg and von der Leyen, respectively.
Yes.
And that has made a big difference. Germany and France, absolutely the centre. I would say, with the Brits now gone, the Poles are the third part of the triangle. And the problem is that relations between Germany and Poland are absolute poison. And the Poles don't trust the Germans. The Polish elections coming up towards the end of this year, there's been a huge amount on sort of Germany bashing, looking for wartime reparations of into €1 trillion, which is kind of not remotely feasible, but it's all good politics. Relationships are terrible. And the Germans are in a complete quandary because everybody needs Poland now, which has got an incredibly authoritarian government, which is just trying to change the constitution again to consolidate its power and isolate the opposition. And in so many ways, Poland is like Hungary with Orban. But at the same time, they're on completely opposite sides of the fence when it comes to Russia.
Yes.
Poland is, along with the Baltics and, must be said, the Brits, the sternest, the firmest for a tough line against Russia. And the Hungarians are the soft underbelly. Interestingly, not all the authoritarians or populist right have been as pro-Putin as one had imagined. When Giorgia Meloni took over in Italy,
yes,
she had form in saying, oh, Putin's not so bad. Italy and Italian corporates have always been very cozy with Russia. But she has played ball, and she has quietly, notwithstanding what she's doing on the domestic agenda, she has quietly impressed or at least relieved NATO and EU officials. So it is a mixed bag. Brits are out of the EU, as we know, and that has done irreparable damage on so many fronts. And yet, on the Ukraine side of things, they are still very influential. So, you know, particularly this sort of northern corridor, the Brits into the Nordics, into the Baltics and down to Poland, almost sort of circumventing the French and the Germans. But, you know, Scholz has got a lot tougher on Russia. Macron is incredibly vain, as usual, and will just do anything to sort of self-preen. But at the same time, it is still hanging in there. But what really matters is what happens over the next 6 months.
Yes, and speaking of Macron, he has urged talks, peace talks, on Zelensky. He is a rogue in the sense that he is liable to do what's best for him and therefore for France in his mind, but he is a rogue. My question to you, John, is knowing Europe as well as you do, in a post-Biden situation, which is, of course, as you say, it's 17 months, but I think it might be anticipated because it may well be that polls tell us long before that election takes place the outcome. Will European stability and indeed NATO's, will it hold in the light of the differences you've referred to there? For example, the difference between Poland and Germany, difference between Germany and France as well, and Britain being outside. And it's one of the ironies of our time that Johnson, Boris Johnson, for all his sort of unattractive features, let's call them.
Yeah, that's putting it mildly.
Well, it is, yeah. He gave a lead, showed leadership, and his government did. And indeed, they continue to do. Wallace, the defence minister in Britain,
appears to be very, very good.
So the question is, how dangerous for Europe is the prospect of a Trump presidency or a DeSantis presidency?
Different, I would say. Trump, everybody knows what he's like, and he's going to be even more unhinged second time around. I think it is incredibly dangerous because some populists are kind of extreme, but also deeply, deeply irrational and therefore unpersuadable about anything and capable very much of acting on impulse. And that is Trump. And in an international arena, we already saw that with him, and I think we would see the same multiplied by several times.
Mm.
With DeSantis, obviously, unlike Trump, in international affairs, an unknown quality. He is trying to rival Trump for the Republican voter with the sort of absurdly rhetorical battle on the culture wars and against liberals. He's fighting this incredible sort of one-man battle against Disney.
And losing.
And he's certainly not cutting an impressive figure. And I think, you know, shares are being sold on him all the time. But let's assume he did somehow win. He would do all that sort of stuff. But I work from the assumption that he might, unlike Trump, he might turn out to be right-wing but pragmatic.
Yes.
As would Nikki Haley, very much a fringe candidate, former Trump ambassador to the United Nations, as would Mike Pence, former vice president, who famously refused to endorse Trump's attack on Congress in January 2021. So those are the other candidates, but I'm not sure whether the Republican Party has any appetite for anybody but Trump.
And that brings into question American support for NATO, American funding, American weaponry. They've provided more money, more weapons, and Trump himself said it last week in that televised town hall. He said, we've given $170 billion, Europe in total has given 21. And he made that comparison and he said, we're mad. We need it for our own people.
But in that respect, I'm with the Americans. And it wasn't just Trump. They've all been saying it.
Yes.
Obama was saying it before.
Really? I didn't know that.
It is an absurdity that Europe, a place of, in total GDP terms, extraordinary wealth, spends so little on defense.
Yes.
The Americans. Now, during the Cold War, you could argue, well, Europe was split in two. It was still rebuilding from the Second World War, and America was the hegemon, the global hegemon. Post-Cold War, post-89, 1990, 1991, that has been gradually shifting. Obviously, just the rise of China, but also the Americans legitimately saying, well, we have to look after numero uno, which is our own people. I think that sort of sense of the Americans putting their foot down and demanding more of Europe is not a purely selfish America first approach. It is saying, look, why should we be your nursemaids all the time, relieving you of the financial pressure to look after yourselves and committing bodies. Now, I think had it not been for for Putin's invasion of Ukraine, the American withdrawal from Europe, physical withdrawal, which had been continuing all the way through the noughties and the tens, would have continued apace. This has stalled it. But it's been clear for many, many years, more than a decade, that America sees China and the Indo-Pacific and the South China Sea as the next potential theater and the most important security question. And it's saying to the Europeans, look, Russia is at your back door. It's on your doorstep. This is Europe. And what are you guys doing? And that's why, it's so important what happened with Scholz and the Zeitenwende in terms of the Germans saying to their voters, we can't continue like this. We've got to look after ourselves.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
How strong is the European commitment to Ukraine absent America?
That's a really good question. Sorry. No, it's a really good question because it's one of those that does make you it does make you wonder, because it is also partly this dependency issue. It also depends, there isn't a single Europe on this. If you share a border with Russia, if you're Poland, if you're the Balts, if you're Finland now.
You're Moldova.
God, if you're Moldova, although that's not in NATO, you are frightened stiff.
Yes.
And any illusions you might have had, this whole idea of you hug Putin close and, you know, and the German idea, if you create economic interdependence, then, you know, it goes against the grain and everybody's self-interest to act in a belligerent way. Well, you know, all of that has been shot now. Everybody has seen Russia for what it is. There is no going back. But you're absolutely right. If the Americans did withdraw, what on earth would Europe do? But more to the point, what would Putin do? For Putin, it would be absolute manna from heaven.
Yes.
You know, the big question is, you know, NATO's Article 5, you know, the mutual defense clause, an attack on one and is an attack on all. So if somebody is attacked, NATO has to defend that country by force. Now, what would happen in a Trump presidency? Would he even recognize Article 5? Would they encourage NATO to invoke Article 5? Or would he find an excuse saying, oh, my friend Vlad has been provoked by this person and that person? You know, he's not going to get, you know, he's just going to duff up a few people and then withdraw his forces again.
Yes.
And if that happens, I mean, NATO is over.
Yes. And there is a strong case, as I'm sure you know, John, given America's experience in Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iraq, they talk of spending too much blood and treasure. There is a strong case for Americans who want to retreat to isolationism, and I'm sure that that's an argument Trump makes and believes in, unlike most of what he says. I just want to ask you a final question about the dangers of all of this. This disengagement from Europe and the possible fragmentation.
Mm.
And finally, and I want to, if possible, put it in the context of another Brexit tragedy, that Britain is not part of Europe now when it's really needed.
I would quibble with your use of the term isolationism.
Right.
I don't think America First is isolationism. It is saying we put our self-interest first.
Yes.
And whatever is good for us is good for us, and that's what we pursue. There's no more sense of, not that anybody's advocating anymore, of a sort of Iraq, Afghanistan style, oh, you know, it's, you know, we need to fight the good fight.
Yeah, or be the phrase, the world's policeman. You may be too young to remember that.
Yeah. So the world's policeman, no, but America using force for its own national self-interest, still potentially yes. Then it's the question of what is America's national self-interest. Well, then you've got a question of China, and you've got, you know, I mean, the massive difference between in American eyes between Russia and China is that China is a massive economic player and Russia isn't. What Russia is a kleptocracy, a fossil fuel state that managed to lure Europe and others into a dependency on its oil and gas, mercifully that dependency, which is largely gone, and largely gone very impressively in barely a year. But Russia's got nothing else to offer anyone.
Yes.
There isn't a Russian model of development. There isn't Russian soft power. There's nothing. There's just corruption and kleptocracy. China is different.
Yes.
And that's why China is so much more of a challenge to the United States. So, you know, you would have a very, very unpredictable world. And as I say, the problem with Trump is that you don't know what to expect at any time, and, you know, terrible rhetoric and basically an unhinged person. But at the same time, you're not going to have, I think, an America that just withdraws into its shores, because it's not in its own interest to do so. Now, whether this, I mean, the really Armageddon thing is that all of this makes Brexit seem like a tea party.
Yes.
Seems like absolutely, you know, nothing else. You know, I mean, the Macron idea, which isn't very well expressed because it always sounds sort of very sort of pompous, strategic autonomy. But it is basically saying to Europe, look, you guys, you know, whether you, you know, it would be nicer if you had been the European Union, Britain, but you're not now. Yeah. But can we please all rally together? And not just in military terms, but in strategic security terms, can we come up with one voice? Problem with that is that it's just, it's incredibly difficult because so many countries have got different agendas.
Okay, John, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show, and we're very grateful to you indeed, John Kampfner. We're grateful to John, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.